injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Jeff's Guitar Clinic is a multifaceted shop offering guitars, amplifiers, and all accessories, guitar lessons for all ages, and instrument repair of the highest quality. Take the scenic drive to beautiful Fort Atkinson and see what total customer satisfaction is all about. Call Jeff's Guitar Clinic today at 920-723-1733. That's Jeff's Guitar Clinic at 920-723-1733. Jeffsguitar.com.
Welcome to another podcast at Sly'sOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like Madison Firefighters Local 311, Teamsters Local 695, and our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. Speaking of a firefighter, one I've known for a long time, Malin Mitchell, one of the many candidates running for governor this year, thanks for coming to Sly's office.
Thanks for having me. It's always good to be back.
And happy birthday.
Thanks. Yeah, yesterday I turned 41 years old. I've been on the job 20 years now, and I'm 41 years old. See, and something.
Why don't we go down your bio here? How did you get started in... First of all, getting on the fire department in Madison is not an easy thing to do.
No, it's not.
And how did you get into leadership in your union?
Well, both of those are long stories, and I'll try to keep it brief. But I got hired in 1997. I was actually living in Illinois at the time, and the city of Madison put out a plea trying to get be more of an inclusive organization. And I was living in Naperville, Illinois.
Oh, my condolences.
Yeah. But I saw the ad, and I was applying everywhere. My older brother was a firefighter. He's a firefighter now in Atlanta.
You grew up in Delavan.
Yes, yeah. Grew up in Delavan, Wisconsin. Yeah. So my younger brother's a firefighter in St. Paul. So being in the fire service, being a firefighter was in our blood. And I got hired. I got hired in Madison and Peoria, Illinois at the same time. And I chose... Me and my wife, we chose Madison, actually. So
good choice.
Yes, very good choice. And then from there, it kind of skyrocketed. I got hired in 97, as I said. I went through the ranks pretty fast on the job. But getting in the union, I actually started by volunteering and just being part of our charitable organization, Local 311 Charities. And then I got on the statewide board in 2009. I was our governmental affairs person here at the local level, so that gave me the ability to run statewide in our as far as firefighters go. And I got on the board in 2009, and then I became president in 2011 because of shakeup among the senior staff and some of the higher-ups. And
some people made some mistakes.
People made some mistakes, which happens. But I was done with the task of being president. I got put on the board or became president in January 11th of 2011, and Governor Walker took office January 3rd of 2011.
And dropped the bomb.
Dropped the bomb.
And the next thing you know, you're thrown into the national spotlight.
Yeah.
Not just the spotlight here in Wisconsin, but the national spotlight, and in some cases, the international spotlight.
Yeah, we had a decision to make, as you know, and you've chronicled it well. I mean, we had a decision to make. We were exempt from Act 10. We were left out of collective bargaining law changes, and we had to decide whether we're going to come out. And this was very early. We didn't know actually what Act 10 entailed. We didn't know what it was budget repair bill at the time. We didn't know what the budget repair bill actually entailed. But once we realized what was going on, we were there every step of the way. And Local 311 really led the charge.
Oh, I remember the day.
Joe Conway and others.
One of the first days as the demonstrations were beginning to grow and grow, I remember watching the crowd as the firefighters came around the corner.
Yeah, and Phil Neuenfeld, who's the president of the AFL-CIO, asked me to speak one time. And I wasn't slotted to speak, and I remember standing there. And my predecessor at the local level, Joe Conway, said... And I was saying, like, what should I say? I'm like, I don't know what to say. I mean, There's thousands of people. He said, why don't you go up there and say the house of labor is on fire and firefighters are here to put it out. And I said that. It had a great response. And then I was speaking at damn near every protest since.
And firefighters and police ended up taking a huge hit because of some of the bills that were passed where you've lost the ability to negotiate on health care.
Yeah.
And so firefighters in cities like La Crosse have huge deductibles now, which essentially is a backhanded way of taking collective bargaining rights away.
Yeah, and so in Act 32, which was a big budget bill that came in June of that same year, we lost the ability to bargain over health care. They called it plan and design, which basically is co-pays and deductibles. And like you said, we have firefighters in La Crosse and some other areas that are, they have $12,000, $15,000 deductibles for a family. Yeah. So there are people literally taking out loans to have a child. And it's sad, but it's something. So a lot of cities, too, are using it as a bully pulpit to say, hey, you know, either give us what we want by way of concessions, A, B, or C, or we'll give you a health care plan you can't afford.
Okay, so and this attack is still going. The other day they passed legislation taking essentially coverage away from a woman who has to make a personal decision on abortion and health care coverage. This is the compensation the workers already have. It's absolutely none of their business, and they're continuing to take away even after somebody's earned their paid for part of their health care and earned that in salary and wages.
Yeah.
Salary and benefits.
What we're seeing at a state level is bad. I mean, there's no other way to say it. I mean, it's horrible, and that's why we need a change.
Malin Mitchell with us, sliceoffice.com. He is running for governor. By the way, what's your website?
MalinMitchell.com, MalinMitchell.com.
So you ran for lieutenant governor eventually. You ran independently but went on the ticket with Tom Barrett. What did you learn traveling the state? Did you take any lessons out of that defeat in 2012?
Well, I learned I don't like to lose. I don't like.
Well, I remember election night. You wanted to get back up there and raise some hell.
Yeah, and I did. And you know, the funny thing is that when you run, they gave me five speeches. They gave me a speech that if I won and Tom Barrett lost, if Tom Barrett won and I lost, they gave me one if we both won, one if we both lost, and one if it's undecided.
That's right. It was a unique situation in that you were separately on the ballot rather
right.
than together.
Yeah. Right. So I could have actually won, and then Mayor Barrett lost, and I could have been Governor Walker's lieutenant governor. I always said that would never happen. But so I had five speeches, and I remember my we were staying at the Hyatt, and we came over to the Hilton. I remember my my communications director at the time saying, well, which one are you going to use? And I said, I'll use one of them. And I went up there. I didn't use any of them. I mean, I just went up there and went off the cuff and spoke, and they were so pissed. But I started talking about President Obama and some other things, and I mean, it was from the heart. I get fired up. But what I've learned, go back to your question, what I've learned is that if you're struggling in Rhinelander, Antigo, Merrill, Superior, where I represent firefighters all across the state, or Milwaukee, Madison, Janesville, Kenosha, Racine, a struggle is a struggle. And it doesn't matter, you know, the governor will always talk about this urban and rural divide, and
he'll exploit it.
Right, that's what they want to do. I mean, that's when he's down in with Diane Hendricks in Janesville. He spoke about the urban rural. I mean, and what he's got to do, he's got to divide and conquer us. And that's exactly what he's done.
So you've learned about that divide. We've also learned that there's a lot of despair where people don't have hope for any sort of economic progress. And as far as wages, the governor's failed miserably. They've given huge tax breaks to corporations and big ag. That have not paid off dividends. I know the unemployment rate is low nationally, which is the same in Wisconsin, but wages aren't going up.
Yeah, and you look at the unemployment rate in our state, it's normally lower than what's happening nationally. We're at 3.1, I think, 3% right now, which is a good thing. But we got to talk about actually what is happening. Our wages going up. When people are working two or three jobs just to make ends meet, you know, unemployment rate is one thing, but actually a true that's one indicator of a good economy. But you look at it, you're talking about the, I think you're hitting on the agriculture manufacturing tax credit.
Right.
And when you look at that, that's been a huge failure. I mean, when you have 75% of those dollars going to those who make over $1 million a year, that's a problem. I think in 2015 or 16, there were 11 people that make over $30 million. They get, in total, $22 million in tax incentives. And that's just, I mean, that's not the way you grow an economy. You grow an economy from the bottom up. When the middle class and those that live below middle class wages have more money in their pocket, they spend it. And that is a driver that goes back into our economy in the state.
Have you thought about how you'd like to change that?
I have. And we're going to have some policy initiatives that look at wage boards or wage commissions that essentially I've been in favor for a long time for $15 an hour. As a minimum wage, as a floor. But there's places that should make more than $15 an hour by county. So we're going to have a policy actually that comes out when session's done here in our state, here at the state capitol. But we're going to have a policy that comes out that talks about wage boards, wage commissions, and essentially where we have, and the governor has the ability to do this by executive order, to look at actually raising wages. But $15 an hour will be a floor.
Well, I do. I remember the rally that Peter Rickman and the workers in Milwaukee had and basically took the governor to court.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're going to do that. And we need to raise wages. I mean, when
so with, if you had a Republican legislature, you would still try to find a way to raise the minimum wage?
Yes. Have to. You have to. I mean, in all honesty, I'm a realist. We're going to more than likely, with the gerrymandering and redistricting that you've talked about a lot on your shows, I'm going to fight like hell to make sure we have a Democratic Senate and a Dem Assembly. But if we don't, you're still going to have to work with people like Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald and try to get things done. They need something. But as a governor, you have the ultimate authority, so to speak, when you have the ability to line item veto.
What is interesting, Democrats had some leverage and unions had some leverage when the Milwaukee Bucks Arena was being built because they needed some Democratic votes on that. So they went along with a deal that turned out to be pretty good for workers. But they needed that. But there had to be enough. There had to be enough Democrats there, and there had to be that leverage point where some Republicans weren't going to vote for it. So it's all about leverage. So the Democrats' numbers in the legislature have to improve if you're going to be successful.
Yeah, that's a perfect example of creative compromise as opposed to constant conflict. They essentially, with the Bucks Arena, they created a zone where everyone's making at the minimum $15 an hour. And the Bucks have gone even further than that, saying everyone that's working there after it's built will make $15 an hour. So
and they have a right to organize.
And a right to organize as well, yes. And so that's a perfect example of what we can do in this state. And it only helps, you know, people at the top are always going to make money. When middle class people have more money in their pocket, people at the top still make more money, and that's fine. But let's not just take the necessities from the many to give luxuries to the few.
But they've made it seem like it's normal, like it's automatic default setting, that workers have no power, that workers have no voice, that the pecking order is that the entrepreneurs are, if there's anything that's some crumbs that are going to come down, it's going to be out of their benevolence, but they're going to run things, and you're not going to have a seat at the table. How can that continue?
It can't. And you know, I'm a union president, and I don't shuck and jive or get scared of who I am. I mean, I'm a union president. I've been on the job 20 years in the Madison Fire Department, but it is the unions that built this middle class. And I don't mind saying that I'm a union president, that I'm a strong union supporter.
There are plenty of Republicans that belong to unions.
Yes. And we built the best, unions have built the best middle class in the world. And so we shouldn't be scared of who we are. We shouldn't be scared to talk about unions or organizing or collective bargaining. Those things lift everyone up, even those that are non-union. When union wages go up, even non-union folks' wages go up as well. So it's important that we continue to fight for the things that matter.
Well, and if we don't fight, they're going to keep fighting to take more away.
Yes.
They have proven that they don't stop. You know, you may remember that Scott Walker used to say, oh, no, I'll never do right to work. I'll never go after project labor.
Prevailing wage.
It's a distraction, boom, 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 right down the whole list.
And prevailing wage is it's not even a union or non-union thing. I mean, that's a middle-class worker construction workers making just a decent wage. And I've been endorsed by the operating engineers, Terry McAllen's group, who have endorsed the Governor Walker the last two times. But they've come over. Now, I would like to say it's because of my good looks and my personality, but that's not the case. They've endorsed a lot of it's because of prevailing wage and PLAs and right to work coming through the state.
They endorsed Russ Feingold and Mark Pocan in the last federal election.
Yes.
Right. Ron Johnson's not their friend. Is that going to cause a problem between you and environmentalists? Because there are sometimes when the operating engineers, you know, they'll want a pipeline to go through, and then there's environmental activists in this state. How do you balance that out?
Well, it's tough, but there's a balance between responsible infrastructure development and our environment. I mean, we have the best worker in the state in Wisconsin, but we also have some of the greatest
best workers in the country in Wisconsin.
Yeah. I'm sorry, some best workers in the country. But we also have great resources in our state that make people want to come here and make places that are doing business want to come to the state of Wisconsin. So there's a fine balance there. Sometimes we're not always on the same page when it comes to environment and business, but you have to have environmental protections along with responsible growth when it comes to development, when it comes to companies as well.
We'll talk more with Malin Mitchell next at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. I want to thank all the labor unions here in Dane County that help keep SliceOffice.com up and going so you keep up to date, whether it be the Madison Firefighters, Local 311, or the Madison Teamsters, Local 695, or our friends at Madison Teachers Incorporated. These are some of the most active local unions who organize, and constantly stand up for workers. Thank you from SliceOffice.com. We're back with Malin Mitchell at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Great local sponsors like Madison Computer Works, S&R Remodeling, and the Axley Law Firm. Malin Mitchell with us. He is one of 150 candidates running for governor.
How do you remember all this without any notes?
Isn't that something? How do you distinguish yourself? I mean, there's obviously the obvious one visually, and you're a younger candidate. But how do you distinguish yourself? There are a lot of good progressive people running for governor.
Yeah. That's democracy, right? I guess the
it's
best...
It's a little unruly right now. It's trying to herd cats.
Well, it's interesting when we have a gubernatorial forum and there's 14 or 15 different candidates up there. It's hard to get your message out. And a lot of times we agree on the same issues. But I'll tell you, in order for us to win this state, it's going to require something different. It's going to entail us getting other people that normally may not come to the polls to come to the polls and actually vote. And if we don't do that, I believe that we still are going to be in the 49-50% of votes, which we've lost. When I ran in 2012, we got 1,156,320 votes. Or around that, but who's counting? It's going to require something different. You look at what happened in Alabama with Doug Jones and Roy Moore, and it was the African-American women who came out in droves. And we need to do something like that here in our state. And I'm not comparing myself, Sly, at all. Please make sure this is documented. I am not comparing myself to Barack Obama. A lot of times the elephant in the room is that can we have a black governor? Like, is Wisconsin ready for a black governor? And I look at Barack Obama and what he did in 2008. He ran by close to 15 points in our state, beating John McCain, U.S. Senator out of Arizona. And then 4 years later, after the negative ads and the negative attacks, he was able to defeat Mitt Romney by close to 6 points in our state. So there's a movement afoot. Wisconsin is ready. It's about conveying the message to common folks. As you know, I'm the president of the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin. We have over 4,000 members in our state, 100 communities. We go far north of Superior, Antigo, Merrill, Hudson. We go far north, Kenosha, Racine, Janesville, Beloit. And the majority of my membership are white males. If you come to my convention, there will be 250 delegates. Matter of fact, I'm inviting your convention. It's in Madison this year. But there will be 250 delegates, and 249 of those, for the most part, will be white male. I'll be the only person of color in the room. They've elected me by acclamation. No one run against me the last three times. So it's about the message, and it's about how you convey that message. And the state wants a leader.
Everything's changing rapidly. And for an old guy like me, some of it I don't adapt to well. Some of the technological changes, I don't understand that young people don't particularly like conversing with clerks. You know, retail jobs are disappearing. I don't understand this Amazon thing. I don't want to have I don't want to talk to some box on a table to tell me to do something. I don't get it. Okay? I work in radio, and I still don't get technology. And anybody who knows me can tell. Dylan's sitting behind me laughing. And yet, young people, as we've seen witness from Parkland, Florida over the last week, are really speaking up in ways that we have never heard before. But they're also speaking up on issues like drugs. Your opponent, Matt Flynn, who used to sort of be a conservative Democrat, who is now running to the left of Bernie Sanders, mm-hmm. He's out saying he will pardon anyone ever convicted of a marijuana crime, right? Where do you stand on that issue as far as marijuana? Because, you know, the sheriff of Dane County, he is not for legalizing. He's a very progressive sheriff, but he is not for legalizing marijuana.
Sheriff Mahoney is?
Yeah.
Really?
He is not.
I guess I didn't even know that.
Oh, yeah.
So I have come out in favor of legalizing marijuana for a couple of reasons. One is the dollars that can be derived from us actually legalizing it and taxing it appropriately, hopefully getting the drug dealers out of the business of dealing at least that drug, would be fantastic for the state and an economic driver. But I will say that, you know, people look at, I was having a conversation with a sheriff. Actually, I spoke to the Badger State Sheriffs the other day, and I was having a conversation with one of them, and there he was against legalized marijuana as well. And as we were sitting there, we were actually having a drink. And I said, well, are you against, should we get rid of alcohol too? They said, no. I said, well, because they call it a gateway drug, marijuana, right? I'm like, well, alcohol is probably the same thing. My point in saying that is that you can go to Colorado and smoke legally, but you come to Wisconsin, you have to hide it. I mean, we have to get some uniformity. And
David Bowen has a proposal that would make it illegal to discriminate against people who've gone to Colorado and smoked marijuana and then, you know, lose a job because of drug testing, yeah, or lose benefits because of drug testing.
Well, the real problem in our state, in our country, for that matter, is the opioid crisis. So I would take any money and the dollars that we would get derived from legalizing marijuana and taxing appropriately and put it towards the opioid crisis. We're talking about prescription drugs, and we're talking about heroin. Those are, you know, those are killers. I mean, we're losing 100 people a day in the country just from the overdoses of heroin and opioids.
What would you do with the school choice program in Wisconsin?
You know, school choice is here. I was never in favor of expanding it. I think public dollars should go to public education. But it's here. It's in Milwaukee. There's some people that enjoy it. But I think we need to adequately fund all education. When you take $1.6 billion from public education like the governor did in 2011 and put back $638 million and call that progress, that's not the proper way to fund our education. Our greatest commodity is our children.
Would you undo the expansion that they did?
I would have to look at that, and I would see if you can reasonably do that. You when you come to the table and you change, when it comes to education and you change whether it be teaching requirements or whether it be academic standards, you have to bring to the table stakeholders and talk with them. But I've never been in favor of school choice. I was always against the expansion. But some people, you go to Milwaukee, there are people that like it. But you can't have school choice and then hurt our public schools at the same time. And they should obviously be right now held to the same standards as every public school.
Road building. this governor promised to fix the roads. And one of the reasons Tom Barrett took some flack in 2010 when he was running for governor the first time was he didn't make a big commitment to rebuilding roads. Should we expand what we're doing now as far as road building? I think I know what your answer is on that one. B, how do we pay for it?
You need more revenue, and no one likes to pay taxes. I pay a lot of taxes myself.
Oh, I've got a Suburban, a Grand Marquis, a Buick station wagon. Yeah, I pay a lot on, but I expect to.
Yeah, and you knew that when you, before you bought those cars.
I did.
So no one likes to pay taxes, but it's about what the government does with the tax dollars that we send them. So I believe, and I've come out in favor of indexing the gas tax. It needs to be done. That's the best way right now to pay for roads.
People don't even notice it.
Right. And you don't notice it, and it's user-friendly.
Is that going to be enough, though? I've heard some say that's not going to be enough.
It's a start. I mean, it's better than what we have now. We have a $1 billion gap in our transportation fund.
I don't like tolling. It reminds me too much of Illinois. I don't
or Ohio,
like
Ohio or Jersey.
Or Indiana.
Yeah, Indiana.
Why should somebody who drives from Milwaukee to Kenosha or Madison to Beloit fund the roads all over the state? Why should all the onus be put on people that are commuting in southern Wisconsin?
It shouldn't. You know, I was, and this is going to be way off kilter, but you know, if we're going to do tolling, what if we actually worked with, and this is going to sound bizarre, I've never said this, I don't think out loud, but what if...
Your staff, yeah, so your staff's like, no.
They love this.
Hey, if there's
this.
A place to say it, it's here.
It's just me and you, right? Me, you, and Dylan, and Taylor, and Robert. They're looking like, oh, no. But what if we work with Illinois, meaning that, you know, there's a toll road that's in Gurnee, Illinois, that's right outside of Great America. And there's also the tolling that's right at the border in South Beloit in Rockford. What if we took a percentage of that money? Whether we help pay for something, we actually take a percentage of that money from Illinois, and we help them fund whatever when it comes to tolling. And that's the way we actually help fund our roads. Like they already have a toll built right on the Wisconsin border. To come to Wisconsin, you're paying a toll to come in. Now, not from Minnesota.
You want them to be the collector?
Well, how do you mean it's hard to trust Illinois, you're saying?
No, I'm just wondering if they'll go along with that.
Well, we're going to have to give something up in that, but I mean, I'm just saying it's an idea.
If it weren't for the privacy issues, the truth is we should all have transponders in our cars and get taxed for the amount of mileage that we travel throughout the state.
So when you go to the gas station, I've heard the chip in the...
This would be a chip in your car. Yeah. So if you're driving from here to Peshtigo or driving here to Wausau and everything, it would take a certain percentage. But
that, so then everyone knows where where you're going.
Exactly, and that's the problem with that. Oregon is considering doing that. There's a number of... Oregon is considering doing that. There's a number of states that are looking at that, but the ACLU is not real crazy about that.
I'm not.
But fewer and fewer people are driving cars. Young people, they live in the third ward of Milwaukee. They don't want a car. They don't want a car. There are a lot of people that have moved to Madison that they don't want a car.
Well, that's why we're advertising. The state's advertising in Chicago to try to get millennials here.
Yeah,
it's a great way to attract
people to the state by taking workers' rights away.
Yeah.
And passing...
Cutting wages.
Going after women seeking abortions, trying to stop stem cell research. Yeah, that really makes it attractive. Joel Clayfish wanting people to be able to hunt on school property. They've come up with a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't really make a lot of people want to move to Wisconsin.
Yeah. But I think going back to transportation, we have to do something about it. You look at the 94 east-west corridor. And that's just, the Zoo Interchange is great right now. I mean, it's got to be great.
Out in front of Miller Park is not great.
No, it's got to be in a bottleneck. I mean, it's got to be horrible. And the governor has, pushed back the federal funding that we're getting. He hasn't made any match in the state budget. But how can you not have a budget when you have both houses, Republicans, an assembly and a senate, and not come up with a good transportation budget or a fix or a cure to the state funding for schools?
One more question. Foxconn versus what's going on in the Fox Valley. You heard me mention it. We've lost half our paper jobs.
Yeah.
Do you support the paper fund that the Democratic legislators have proposed?
I do.
And what did you think of Foxconn?
Yes, I support that. You look at, so going back a little ways, Foxconn's a bad deal, first of all. Bad deal. It's giving $4.4 billion and getting a return on your investment 25 years later. There's no bank that would make that deal. Zero. So it's a bad deal. But if you look at
I don't know. Maybe Donald Trump's Russian bank, Mike, but that's a different story.
Yeah, you look at Appleton Colding, you look at Manitowoc, look at Crane, you look at right now with Kimberly Clark. Before someone comes to your house, normally, what do? You clean it, right? So if we were to like make ourselves the best when it comes to education and educating our children, the best when it comes to health care, we didn't take the Medicaid expansion. That would have gave 84,700 more Wisconsinites health care. We got about 300,000 people in our state right now that don't have any health care whatsoever. If we were to raise wages and make our economic development fantastic, if we were to make our roads the best. Right now we're second in the world, the worst roads in the country. Number one's Connecticut. If we were to fix our infrastructure, make our roads great, make our health care great, and also make sure we take care of our children, our greatest commodity, then places like Foxconn will want to come here. We won't have to give them this huge parachute or golden, these dollars from the state, from taxpayers, to come here. They'll want to come here because we have the best worker in the country and we have the best natural resources. Now, when you talk about Kimberly Clark, I got hammered a little bit, actually, for saying that I believe in us helping companies that are here. I mean, it's one thing to help a foreign company come to our state, but Kimberly Clark's here. They started here. And you look at what's just happened not too far from where we are, and that's at in Dane County.
Oscar Mayer.
Those are 650 jobs, assembly jobs gone, 300 administrative jobs, so about 1,000 jobs gone just like that. Not much fanfare, not talked about. Now we have a vacant building on the north side of Madison. You look at Tyson Foods in Jefferson, 450 jobs gone just like that. Not much to be talked about. You talk about our paper mills in Wausau. They are cutting jobs. They are cutting shifts, and we're not helping them at all. So if we're going to help companies and corporations, and I believe the government should or the state should be involved in some sort of facilitating or being a liaison between corporations to make sure we have good, adequate paying jobs and make sure they stay here in our state. If Kimberly Clark, there's 600 people that could be laid off. If one of those 600 are your family members, I believe you'd have a different say-so in what, or a different say in how that's being done. And I'll tell you, you know, those are steel workers' jobs, and I say we should do everything we can to keep them.
Marilyn Mitchell, thank you for coming to SliceOffice.com.
Thanks
for having
me.
We'll do this again.
All right. I love it. Appreciate it. Good seeing you again.
This is SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.